Hello, everyone on People's Internet Radio, Seeking Sovereign Solutions. So we are so happy to be here with you today. We have Stephen Roberts, my favourite host and favourite producer. Stephen, hello.
Hello, Jill.
And we have Barbie Vaughan. Hello, Barbie Vaughan.
Good morning, good afternoon, good evening. Hello.
Hello. And we may have Laurel, if we can bring her in, who we had last week talking about sustainability. But today we want to talk about sex and death, Eros and Thanatos. Stephen and I did a very interesting interview the other day with Carl Grossman. It was only yesterday, wasn't it? Who's he, what's he, Stephen?
Yes, yesterday.
Yes, and I just quite astonished at the way that the world is just being ruined by Fukushima. Every day we're just killing the world every day and we're just ignoring it. And so I didn't know what was happening with my show. Laurel didn't know whether she could come or not. Now it appears as though she's going to come. So I thought, well, look, why not have Thanatos and Eros? Eros and Thanatos, the sex drive and the death drive. We threw this idea together in the last 5 minutes. And that's what we're going to do, aren't we, Barbie?
We are indeed. And considering, you know, the highest moment of the sex act is called the little death, the petit mort, I think it all links together very well, Jalee.
That's right. The death of what? What dies in that little death, Barbie?
What dies? I think it's just a moment of exaltation and bliss, which is, you know, related to what death is. Death is not necessarily the horrible, awful thing a lot of people think. So, you know, some deep philosopher has probably at some time thought about how the moment of ecstasy is actually like the moment of death. So that's why it's called the petit mort.
I think that's completely correct. Now, my earplugs are in the wrong place and I could be making
Get them out of your nose, Jill. They're not meant to be in your nose. They're in your ears here.
I might try talking down the nose at some people, Barbie. That might work a bit better, you think?
It just made me think of, if they're not in your ears, where were they? Okay, good. You're set up now. Good.
Stephen, you liked the Cranky Sisters when I played them to you, didn't you?
Well, I liked the one video.
Do you want to put that one on? Seems like a very fitting time for people to listen to some Australian humour.
Well, we all have to mute if we're going to watch it or listen to it.
Well, look, I think the Cranky Sisters will be good, and I can try and find my way into the chat box and see what's happening there.
Barbie's in there.
Oh, well, she's quick. I'm dyslexic. Or as somebody once said to me, I think I'm dyspeptic. And I said, I think you might be. you don't want to talk about sex, do you, Stephen?
You girls can talk about whatever you want to talk about.
Yeah, but you never want to talk about sex. Let's face it.
Let's talk about sex, baby. Let's talk about you and me.
All right, let's get the Cranky Sisters. Have you got them there? Let's bring them up because they have a very funny conversation about sex. And then we're going to talk about Fukushima because we've got a bit of an interview there that we were talking about. Have you found them yet, Stephen?
Yes,
get the one on
set. Yes.
All right, let's get them. They're very droll. They have black hair in a sort of a Cleopatra cut, but a little bit longer. They may as well be wearing. Describe them, Barbie.
Well, they're just very sort of gothic looking, very serious looking. They look like something out of the Addams Family.
Yeah.
That's what they look like. And there's one sister who sits there with a trombone and she never speaks, and they're very talented. So
this one speaks, but
she can't speak because I think she's a man anyway.
No, she sings. Let's put it that way.
Oh, she does sing, actually. She does.
So hey, whatever it was, yeah.
Yeah, she sings.
It's a bit unusual, a bit left of center.
Yeah. I'll put the link in the chat for everyone.
Okay, it's very much my sense of humor.
Are you ready for it, Jill?
We're ready, Stephen.
All right. Go ahead and mute.
Oh, Stephen.
Yes.
Here we are. Laurel wants to come in.
Oh, okay.
Can you pick her up?
Yes, I can.
Thanks. Barbie, you haven't met Laurel.
Hi, Laurel.
No, she hasn't arrived yet. You'll see her picture on the screen when she arrives.
Oh, jolly good. I didn't realise the Kranskys were going to be doing sexual healing. What a hoot.
I know. It's hilarious. Stephen found it.
Very clever.
Mm.
Oh, dear. Well,
I'm not sure I have her in my contacts or not.
Well, I've just given you everything. It's on the screen in our chat here where I've been sending you messages saying, get Laurel, bring her in, please.
I don't and think blah, I blah, have blah. Her contact. Oh, there
well,
she
darling,
is.
Okay. We did a show with her.
Ah,
so
yes, we did. Okay.
We must... L-A-U-R-E-L.
All right. There she is. Okay.
And she'll be thrilled to know the topic. We'll throw it right in the deep end. And it's going to be great. We'll see how sexual healing fits in with sustainability. Laurel, welcome.
Good morning. How are you this morning? Well, I guess it's evening for you.
Oh, look, we've got three very, very, very big, strong women on this show today by the look of things.
Hi, Laurel.
Hi.
This is a friend of mine, Barbie von Dracek.
Nice to meet you.
She ran Bay FM for, what did you do, Barbie?
I did a show on Bay FM, a community radio in Byron Bay on the easternmost point of Australia for about 10 years. Wonderful radio station.
Yes.
So there.
Yes, that takes me back. I used to do community radio on the Mornington Peninsula. Yes.
I'm down in that area now, Laurel. I'm down around Mornington Way.
Ah, lovely.
Wow. Poor old Barbie's driving around in a Porsche four-wheel drive at the moment. I didn't even know they made them.
Better not get used to it. It's not mine.
Oh, well, enjoy it while you can. So what are
exactly,
you talking about this morning?
We're talking about life and death. We're talking about Eros and Thanatos.
Right.
And we just played the Kransky Sisters song, Sexual Healing.
Oh, beautiful.
Yeah, so it's... pardon?
You've got to love love.
You have to love love, don't you? It's so true. Love is like... I remember once a wise man said to me, love rules the universe. And then he said, why does love rule the universe? Answer me, girls and boys. Why does love rule the universe?
I think it's what we're made of. I think it's what we've sprung from. I think it's the very essence of our beings. And I think it's a highly undiscovered and unexplored physical power as well that we just haven't even learned how to use yet.
Well, I think innately we're all connected to love and we just get so overlaid with other beliefs and assumptions and identities that we obscure our own vision.
Exactly.
Yes, in a cultural miasma. So... Yeah, love's always
We obscure our own identity in this cultural miasma. I like that, Laurel. I could write that on the back of a toilet wall.
And she would too. And probably not her own.
Somewhere on the Mornington Peninsula.
It's interesting because I thought you guys may have been talking about Fukushima this morning. And
we are.
And when you mentioned it, I thought, gee, I don't really know that much about Fukushima. But I realise I know about the principles and yep. and also some of what blindness that comes with a situation like that when people don't want to know about it. And that, I mean, when you get down to it, it really is, it is about love and fear because it's the fear that comes with we've got to keep things the way they are and keep growing and keep ourselves out of trouble instead of being completely taking responsibility for our actions. And I'm not just talking about the company that runs the nuclear reactors, but our whole culture is geared to a particular way of being. So, I thought it was an interesting topic to explore.
Well, it is an interesting topic just to explore, and I thought that I could just sort of, I thought about it and I thought, will I throw people on an emotional roller coaster ride and fluctuate between Fukushima and sex? And I thought, yeah, why not? You know, like, because that's actually what life is in a way, isn't it? Like, and it's being able to surf the waves, you know?
Yeah.
So, go on.
Well, I was thinking about, just thinking that really every society clings to the myths by which they live.
Yes.
And, ours has been economic growth. So for the last, I don't know, 5 decades or so, the pursuit of growth has been the single most important policy goal across the world. And, and so when we're living in that myth of economic growth, then we obscure other things that are, well, I was going to say equally important, but more than equally important, more important.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's so true. And this is ties in with like the World Health Organization, because health is about eros. Eros is the drive for living, and thanatos is this death. And interestingly enough, when we just interviewed this very famous man called Professor Carl Grossman, who we're going to play a bit of him on this show. Stephen and I interviewed him yesterday, and fortunately he liked us very much, and he said he would love to do more interviews with us, either singularly or together. We had really bad audio on this. Stephen, can you put the link in the chat box for it so people can see it? It was a podcast. I wasn't happy with a lot about it, and my voice was echoing and it was really bad. But at about 40 minutes, I think he gets into 30 to 40 minutes, we can put it in. But anyway, he was basically saying that the Earth before life came on Earth was full of radioactivity, and it wasn't until we got rid of all the things that we're now getting out of Fukushima that life on Earth could happen. So...
Exactly. And I think one of the things is this is part of our reasons for our collective blindness, is because the modern economy is structurally reliant on economic growth for its stability. And so when growth falters, as it's done in more recent years, politicians panic. And then we have businesses struggling to survive. Now, right now I'm quoting Tim Jackson, who wrote a wonderful paper called Prosperity Without Growth. So when you have a situation where people lose their jobs and sometimes their homes, and we have the frightening prospect of spiraling, recession spiraling down, then anybody who questions economic growth is seen to become kind of a lunatic or eco-activist or revolutionary. But where it leads to ultimately is back to what you're talking about, that the difference between operating from love and trust and potential for seeing different ways of being in the world, and knowing that particular myth that we've been living in has really outgrown its use by date. Does that make some kind of sense?
Makes enormous sense. Barbie and Stephen, you have to talk. I get sick of me doing all the talking.
I'm just interested. This morning I've seen two things. I've seen a comment by Gina Reinhart, who's a mining magnate here in Australia, who's she's got so many billions of dollars that she's worth, and she's now written an article saying that Australia can no longer afford to give money to the to people on benefits and things like that, that's what's dragging the country down, and we have to stop doing that. And somebody's retorted to that, saying that she wants tax breaks. She's asking for all these tax breaks and everything, even with all her money, and how crazy that is. And then I saw another article about how Switzerland has decided to give every citizen in its country a certain amount of money every month. I think it's about 2,500 euros or something like that, so that the population cannot be concerned so much with survival, but can actually see what it is that they're intrinsically interested in and investigate that sort of side of life. And I'm just sort of thinking, it's like everything always in life, you get one side of it looks terribly bad, and then you get somebody else, some another country altogether, that's acting in a very enlightened and wonderful way. And how the two get together and how we, you know, get an economist picture across the world is the struggle always. But just interesting how when I think just before moments of enlightenment, you get these radically different ideas cropping up.
Well, look, yes, absolutely. And interestingly, one of the things that has fascinated me for a while is the impact of communities who are resilient and who do live sustainably. So I'm thinking about local communities who take it upon themselves to create micro economies and do things like community gardens and street dinners and
very inspiring stuff.
And then the potential to build on that is really important.
I love it. You're right up my alley. You know, that's what I think. Hey, Stephen, I think, are you playing with us anymore?
I'm here.
Oh, okay. Look, I want to keep this short and snappy. Let's put in this Monty Python skit now. We've gone off sex, but we'll try and get back to sex in a minute.
You were talking about Carl Grossman just a minute ago.
Yeah, all right. You want to put him on instead?
Whatever you want, Jill. It's your show.
All right, I've decided I don't want to do Carl at the moment. I want more fun.
All right.
If we're going to be a thriving, thriving planet, yes, it's really important to build on the things that bring us joy and inspiration.
All right. Barbie.
I've had an interesting experience in the last year about alternative communities, Laurel. I spent 3 months in New Mexico off the grid near Taos, and the people there, without any power, without any water, the way they join together and help each other to survive in those conditions, and the sort of community spirit that grows from that sort of interesting, we don't need the utilities. We don't, don't need to be paying these big monies to these huge conglomerates in order to survive, is totally inspiring. Wonderful, wonderful experience.
Perfect segue for what I want to play. I want the Monty Python skit that I've got there for you, Stephen. You ready with it?
Yes, I am.
Well, let's take it away and talk about, this is one of our, it's a bit of a favourite Monty Python skit, isn't it? It's about being sovereign people, really. Let's go.
All right. Everyone has to mute.
You guys are muted. Barbie, you're laughing, but you're muted.
Sorry, yes, I was just laughing hysterically at some moistened bit tossing a scimitar at him from a lake.
I know, it's good.
The basis for government.
Yeah, exactly. And what's the basis for government? This is back to this Eros and Thanatos. The World Health Organization is designed to look after people's health. That's Eros. That's life. And they've gone and married the IAEA. They've gone and married how do you say it, Stephen? The Atomic Energy what is it? IAEA.
IAEA. Atomic, I don't remember now.
Anyway, it was hilarious. Anyway, we don't know. But anyway, we do know. It's just I've got it on notes here. I'll have to bring up some notes. But the whole point is the World Health Organization, I hate to have forgotten this name, have are married to the Atomic Energy Association, and they have been since 1957-59. And what's happened is that is such a life and death marriage. And so while death is busy sort of creeping up upon us through atomic energy, the World Health Organization cannot say what they want to say. And there was a great big crisis recently, it was quite a few years ago now, in which this professor got fired for speaking the truth. Do you remember that one, Stephen?
What's that?
A lot of professors fired for speaking the truth, actually. Yeah. We live in dangerous times when we speak the truth.
I got a call on my cell, Jill, and I had to put my, I had to take my help, my headphones off.
Hold it off.
Yeah. You're forbidden from doing that, Stephen. You're on this show with us. All right, well, you're not forbidden. So, Stephen.
Yes.
Do you know about that situation? I think the name's guy's name, but I'll have to look it up. Anyway, look, let's not make me sort of splutter around here for too long. Anyway, basically, Grossman, in the interview we were doing with him, who's an absolute, he's an expert on Fukushima and on nuclear power, and he and Helen Caldicott are very big against it. He was saying how important it is for people to actually stand up and fight and do something about what's happening with Fukushima. Because yeah, Fukushima, and we're at the anniversary now. Yes, Stephen?
Well, that's got nothing to do with Fukushima. There's a 500,000 issues out there that people need to stand up and do something about. It's not just Fukushima. Just pick an issue, Jill.
I'll pick Fukushima.
Okay.
So what? And we've got Carl Grossman to back us up there, because basically he said at the end of the interview, if you want to play like the last 5 minutes, Fukushima is the most, I don't know what he says, but that'll do. Fukushima is the number one priority. Like, Fukushima is the worst thing that's happening in the world.
It's going to be, well, one of the things he mentioned was it's going to be the death of hundreds of thousands of people, if not millions of people.
Already. This is the thing, because atomic power is atomic. It's on the level of atoms, so it's imperceivable. This is the thing about radiation and these things that are leaking into the ocean. Like, it's like we're having a nuclear explosion permanently. It's like there's this permanent atom.
California coast are high and low and all over the place, but they're getting, you know, sizable nuclear atomic readings in on the coastline of the US.
So how do we organize for that? And we have to organize for that, because I think what we really have to do is face the fact that Fukushima is the number one thing. And what Stephen was just saying is that basically there's 1,000 things we can fight about, and that's where the community rights situation, if we all own our own community rights as members, sovereign people, for want of a better name, but it's a real name, as people who've inherited this earth and the parents of children who are going to inherit this earth, then we need to stop thinking, oh, look, they're oppressing us, there's nothing that we can do. But we need to be more like those Monty Python people in the mud. And we need to say, what the hell do you think you're doing? And we all need to get together and get some basic, we all have common laws that we could use that could say we can't do this. So if every nation, you know, if we can all, we're going to have to work where we can influence people. So that's probably even, Laurel, tell me about this, within our own community. Like, if we can get our council to say we want our state fellow to go and get our federal fellow to protest against Fukushima, we want our country to go and say you have to clean up Fukushima now and not leave it in the hands of TEPCO and Japan. We need to lift the ban of secrecy, and we have the right to know the truth. And it would be in our Declaration of Human Rights. It would be in UNESCO. It would be somewhere. But if everybody gets together, Laurel's really good on this sort of thing, Barbie, too. Like, she studied this at university, how to empower people. She's a sustainability expert, not as in Agenda 21, but true sustainability. So, or more like a anyway, it doesn't matter. So the point that I'm making is we do need to actually, Jill Trebilcock needs to go and talk to somebody, a few people, about this. Well, I'm talking on radio about it now, but I also need to go locally, and I need to go and talk to Bill McClenaghan, my local councillor, and get a group of people, and then we need to make a protest, and we need to have laws in place. And there are, and this is my point, there already will be laws in place that our country is not evoking. And we're not getting the truth, you know what I mean? We're not getting the truth from Japan, we're not getting the truth from the media, we're not getting the truth from enough places. Laurel, some ideas, please.
Well, look, it's brought several thoughts to mind, because we do live in complex systems. It's I think people have a bit of a tendency to reduce it to a very, you know, that reductionist, simple, oh, they just have to do this kind of an argument. But in fact, some of the ways that we need to change something like Fukushima, and so that it doesn't happen again, we need to address it on a number of different levels. And so so you might have the activists who are out there, and God bless them, you know, I love them for doing that, is to have big campaigns, to have, when you see people like Greenpeace and people who really put their life on the line for that. And then you have
Laurel, to interrupt at that point, Carl Grossman actually said that's we all need to join Greenpeace. Like one of us should join Greenpeace.
Well, I think,
or there are a couple of other organisations.
The thing about that is that people will do what is in alignment with their own values, or what they've been acculturated to with their own.
Yes, I'm in fantasy land again. Yep, go on.
So, you know, not everybody's going to join Greenpeace, but when you see just a simple example on Facebook last night, I saw a photograph that somebody put it up. It may have even been you, Jill, and it was three photographs. It was a picture of, it said solar spill, and there was a picture of solar panels everywhere, a picture mm-hmm. of windmills, and then it said yep. wind spill, and then the third picture was oil spill. And, of course, you see, seabirds coated in oil and so on. And it was such a provoking photograph. And so for the average person, it's like, oh, yeah, it's such a reminder, because it's not that people don't care. It's just that it's not in their face and they don't necessarily feel inclined to join Greenpeace
or empowered
to do anything individually.
Yeah.
Which
is why we're bringing it in our face today, because we're at the anniversary of Fukushima now, which is why we're having this show, actually, because we need to put it in our faces. Keep going, Laurel.
Well, I think it's very easy to blame the bad business that started the nuclear reactors, you know, that run the business there. But really, we've all of that community has benefited from those things. And that's why I keep banging on about growth, because when we live in an economic system that only cares about growth, and that's the only measure that we're using for success, then reluctant to do growth. Anything different at all. And there's a huge vested business interest in keeping that myth afloat. Because
yeah. So you're looking at the motivation. Yeah.
And the bottom line politics, the bottom line really gives me the, you know, gets on my goat. When are they going to change the bottom line being an economic marker?
Well, you know, I think there's a cohort of people emerging, and particularly amongst younger generations, where they're just saying, look, okay, these terrible things are happening and we do need to stand up and do something about it, and we need to just take care of ourselves and become resilient ourselves and do... You start a different system, so And this is the issue.
Yeah.
It's like that whole doesn't work
anymore. But the thing is, I think the point is we have that system as well, and we have to work both. We have to work many systems at once.
Yes.
Like if you're going to cure an ecosystem, you might look at the mold here and add some mold there, or take some, you know what I mean? Like you might look after the tree here and the birds. You know, the ecosystem has many things that can all have illnesses that are interdependently sort of causation, but they, you know, they all can be helped in different healthy ways.
Well, look, exactly. And the thing is, you need to talk people's language. So if you want to influence people in business to do something different when they have a vested interest to be a particular way, then you have to learn to be very savvy with your business language and give them an economic case or a business case for living more sustainably on this planet. And to date, I don't think we've done that well. So whilst Greenpeace is fantastic, it's bringing things to the world's attention, you need to work at a different level of the, you know, in the stock market, in the policy and board make, with the policy makers and decision makers.
Yep. Yeah, and Laurel, yeah, go
link on. Link that to their values. So what is it that they value and how can they express them differently that's not life-destroying?
Yeah, so we use skillful means when we're speaking to different people, but we all still have to take responsibility and recognise that Fukushima is such a mess, and then we really do need to disarm the world. We really need to disarm the world of nuclear power. And we also need to get a divorce between the World Health Organization and the Atomic Energy Association. They cannot be married to each other.
Yeah, absolutely. That's a pretty important to decouple things. Yes.
Yeah, because they are, you know, like anything that the Nuclear Association, the World Health Organization is saying is a cause of radiation, and this is what Helen Caldicott is so upset about. Anything that the World Health Organization says that isn't approved by the Atomic Energy Association doesn't get said. So the World Health Organization cannot be telling people what is happening. And like you said, we need to have it in your face. We need to see what is happening. In Fukushima today, it's spilling into our ocean. It is killing our world, and nobody's doing anything. Everybody's sitting there, including myself, thinking someone else will take care of it. I haven't had one political gesture so far, apart from Facebook, which is and the radio, but I haven't done anything to stop Fukushima. And I really feel I have to do something, and that we all do, because this stupid blucking company, TEPCO, and these bloody Japanese saving face are under the control of someone somehow, and it's not being stopped. You know, there's not very many people working on it. They can't even get near it. It's blowing up there. Some of them are blowing up their things. And then, Barbie, there's the same thing with you in Mexico. What happened in Mexico this week?
In the last couple of weeks, there was elevated radiation levels in New Mexico near Carlsbad, which was it's dissipated now, and they think it was because they've stored nuclear waste near this place underground. I think it's 300 meters. I'd have to check exactly how deep it is, but they think there was some shifting in the land and in the earth, and that released some of these toxic gases, but it's considering that's the area of the world I'm thinking of moving to, it certainly made me very nervous and prick up my ears. But you know, fracking as well is shocking. I think we can have all this philosophical talking, but you push the earth so far, and then the earth's going to push back, and then we'll just have to suddenly, you know, really get a handle on it. So I'm wondering, is there some actual? Where do you go for the best information about Fukushima, the most correct information? I don't know where to go to find information about what's actually the truth about what's happening at Fukushima. Does anybody else know?
Hey, let's play the end of Carl Grossman's tape now, Stephen. I think he mentioned some things that we can do there.
How much of the end?
Oh, 5 to 7 minutes.
Now, just before you do that, because I just really want to pick you up on something you said, Thank Jill, because then I have to go. Is that you can making the people wrong or making their, for example, save face doesn't win you any friends. You can make the behavior wrong any time, the actions, but you do know better.
Yeah, no, I felt uncomfortable. I felt uncomfortable when I said that. I felt that it was wrong.
Yeah, so I do have to pick you up on that. Because I know that you are a caring and ethical person who does want
to
make
a difference. That's right. Some wonderful Japanese people at Fukushima have actually sacrificed their lives to try to save the situation.
I actually meant the Japanese Prime Minister who's leading the silence.
And even so, what
pressures are here under. I don't want to. He's still my friend. I would still serve him and give him a cup of tea and a lovely moon bun.
Jill.
This is such an interesting conversation,
but
I've got to go.
I have to
kowtow to all Japanese people. Thank you, Laurel. Thank you. I kowtow to you too. Thank you for picking me up. Okay, Stephen, let's play Carl Grossman.
I have to warn you, Jill, every minute you play of Carl Grossman is going to take away from your time. You've only got about 11 or 12 minutes to go.
Well, then play 3 minutes. Or 4 minutes.
Okay.
Poor Stephen. How does he know how to find exactly what you want? Anyway, good luck.
The point that I wanted to make in relation to I wanted to say to Laurel too is it's important. What I was thinking of important, and I agree completely with everything she said there, is the grassroots organisation. I don't know. I think what I was really trying to say, I think we need to have a positive mental attitude and a positive heart attitude to everybody who we relate to, don't we, Barbie?
Yes.
Like, you know, that is the reason we began with, why does love rule the world? And the world because we're all seeking love. We all are love. We all recognize love in each other. And that's our true nature, is that compassionate, you know, altruistic, affinitive sort of, that's how we connect. Anything else is sort of like a repulsion. But I want to love the world, and I want to love Fukushima away from here.
In another show, perhaps I can talk about my experience of an actual physical, real physical power of love. And I'd love to see what would happen if we turned that on some of these situations. But we don't have time now. But another time, I'd love to talk about that. It's a real
Sorry, Barbie, go on.
No, go on.
Well, we need to love our earth, and let's love it by listening to what we can do and talk to everybody lovingly about how much we care about what Fukushima is doing to the world. Mm-hmm. Let's care. We need to care more. Come on, Stephen, who I love too.
Okay. All right. Welcome, everyone. This is
for me and the viewing public. Maybe every couple of hundred years you might have a minor accident because there's all kind of redundancies built into these nuclear power plants and so forth. But when the Three Mile Island accident happened, that day, I was fooled by these scientists. They made an attempt to bamboozle me, and I put this crap on the air. These lies on the air, because I found in doing this book that I mentioned, Cover Up, and why the book I think is valuable, though I wrote it 30 some odd years ago, today is because what I decided to do, considering the snow job, considering the propaganda, was I took a scissor and I cut out segments of various reports. In fact, there's pages of reports done at Brookhaven National Laboratory, because as I say, it was the National Nuclear Laboratory, specifically set up to develop civilian uses of nuclear technology, and it did the earliest reports on the likelihood and the consequences of nuclear plant accidents. One called the WASH 740, WASH is for Washington 740. One called the WASH, this is the 1950s, one called the WASH 740 update, done in the 60s. And in WASH 740 update, a line that repeats over and over and over again, this was done in the 60s, and I reprinted in the book as a facsimile. So you're not, you know, just looking at what I write. A reader can look at the actual documents, and it can be a handbook in terms of getting to the truth on this issue. Over and over again in WASH 740 update is the line that a major nuclear plant accident could devastate an area the size of the state of Pennsylvania. Over and over, this is 10 years before the Three Mile Island accident. It was 30 seconds from a full meltdown. It was a partial meltdown. Nearly devastated the state of Pennsylvania. So the thing is that what has happened at Fukushima, what has happened at Chernobyl, was anticipated by these people. They knew there would be these consequences. In fact, in my book Cover Up, the way I kind of thought they would play it finally when the consequences occurred would be by saying that, well, 30,000, 40,000 people get killed in automobile accidents every year in the United States. we're just going to have to tolerate this death toll from nuclear power. But what they've done instead, and this I wouldn't have expected, is to just go to zero, to not admit 30,000 or 40,000 deaths or any deaths. They're saying, yeah, Fukushima happened. I mean, in a recent study by Stanford University, every bluefin tuna caught off California was contaminated with cesium from Fukushima, and the full load of contaminants from Fukushima hasn't hit the west coast of the U.S. yet. I mean, the toll, and in fact, there's been very important studies done by Joseph Mangano and Dr. Jeanette Sherman of the Radiation Public Health Project of thyroid disorders beginning to show up in the United States among children. I mean, that's the first tip-off of the impacts of radioactivity, thyroid malfunctions, thyroid cancer, and so on. I mean, the toll of destruction, the toll of death. Well, Einstein, actually, in his book, Out of My Later Years, he wrote it in 1946, he writes about how it's not new that humanity is misled and essentially is sent off a cliff. What's new when it comes to nuclear technology is the scale of destruction, the scale of destruction. And what I'm saying, as a journalist who is...
You're right.
Oh, thank you. Goodness. Ay, ay, ay. I just realized something. Well, okay.
We've got to play this one then if you can't play that one.
Yeah. No, I'm okay.
Yeah. Bobby Vaughn, thank you so much for coming.
Pleasure. Thank you. Having
went very quickly. Stephen Roberts and People's Internet Radio, thank you very much for having us. We had a wonderful time. We didn't talk much about sex in the end, though, did we, Barbie?
Sex. Oh, right. Sex is great, yes.
All right, ladies.
See ya. Thank you. You're so funny.